I tend not to read the editorials in that publication because they're just not reflective of the electorate in their readership. But my response was very specific when it comes to condemning violence. I condemn violence.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. Thanks for listening to the WAMC News Podcast. On this episode, we're turning the entire thing over to our North Country Bureau Chief Pat Bradley's conversation with third-term Republican Congresswoman Elise Stefanik of New York's 21st Congressional District.
The last time we chatted, it was really in the flush of the House impeachment hearings. A lot has occurred since then. Politically, on January 15th, you were named one of the Trump campaign's honorary New York State chairs. On January 20th, you were named a member of President Trump's impeachment defense team. Looking at that, back in 2016, you were much more measured in your support for Donald Trump. What changed?
Well, nothing has changed, Pat. I voted for President Trump in 2016. That was my first term in Congress, was in 2015 and 2016, and I waited until the primary was over. I always said I would support the nominee, and I voted for President Trump, and I have had the opportunity to work with him very closely, to work with the administration on a number of issues, whether it's standing up for Fort Drum, fighting for veterans in our district, getting a farm bill done, passing an updated trade agreement with the United States, Canada, and Mexico. So I think the record of results really speaks for itself. I consistently prioritize the hardworking families of my district, and President Trump has been a partner to help deliver those results.
You have promoted during your time in office working across the aisle, but if you are closely aligning with President Trump, being his honorary New York State chair, being on the impeachment defense team, things like that, doesn't that compromise doing bi- or nonpartisan legislative efforts?
It does not, Pat, because my record speaks for itself. I am proud to consistently be in the top 10% most bipartisan members of Congress. I always put my district first, and I keep my promises. So on the tax bill, for example, I voted no because it would potentially raise taxes for people in my district who are not able to deduct their state and local taxes. That's capped now. So I've kept my promises to my constituents going back to my first race in 2014. But if you look at my legislative record, I am in the top 10% most bipartisan members, delivering results, again, you know, increasing the pay for our troops, passing a bipartisan farm bill, passing legislation commemorating the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage. Most of what I do is bipartisan. And frankly, while the media tends to focus on sometimes the divisive issues, a lot of what President Trump has accomplished has been bipartisan. Look at the economic growth. Look at the focus on manufacturing and career and technical education. Look at the focus on rural America, specifically our agricultural interests, which is very important in this district, but it's important across the country. This president has prioritized bipartisan legislative results, and sometimes that's difficult to get through the media coverage, but it's just the fact. And my legislative record, again, it stands strongly as one of the most bipartisan in the House.
When you talk about bipartisanship and the Trump administration, and you take a look at New York and the Trump administration are not getting along right now. One of the things lately is New York's green light law that there's a dispute over. You're also criticizing the state's green light law. You've called it a dangerous policy. Why?
Why? It's because it doesn't allow information sharing between our federal law enforcement and our state law enforcement. We are now the only state in the country that doesn't allow federal law enforcement to access the DMV database. That was a law put into place under Governor Cuomo. It's failed leadership. He did not listen to the input from law enforcement in my district or across the state. And what's particularly important in my district when I have thousands of CBP officers and Border Patrol, they need to make sure that they're able to do their job. And part of that is information sharing between the federal and state law enforcement. So I know that Governor Cuomo is pointing fingers to other, but the accountability really needs to be on New York. They're setting a very dangerous precedent, and they need to address this as soon as possible to ensure that we continue to have safe and secure communities, that our law enforcement personnel are able to do their job, but importantly for this district, that we continue to have the positive economic partnership between the U.S. and Canada.
Well, along all of those lines, Congresswoman, the Trump administration has suspended the Trusted Traveler program in an attempt to get the state to comply. But Trusted Traveler through Nexus and FAST is something that, number one, is secure travel. People have already been processed through those programs. And number two, the North Country Chamber says those programs are crucial for this region. So how can you support the administration policy that could potentially hurt the district's economy, according to the chamber?
Well, the way you're asking the question, Pat, is not based upon what actually happened. It's because New York State put in a law that doesn't allow the federal law enforcement to access the New York DMV. And that has had an impact on the Trusted Travelers program. The way we fix this is for New York to reform the green. I don't support the green law, but they absolutely need to fix it so that our federal law enforcement officers are able to have access to the New York DMV. This should have been fixed. We warned Governor Cuomo of this. But again, the only reason New York is in this position is because of the failed policies coming out of one-party rule in Albany with Governor Cuomo, who has been dismissive of the concerns of, frankly, of upstate New York, but also of law enforcement across the state. I mean, look at the recent press conferences in Albany this week, Pat. It was county sheriffs, Border Patrol, Customs and Border Patrol. This isn't about being partisan. This is about making sure that they're able to do their job in order to ensure that we have safety and security in our communities, but that we also have the economic commerce across the border. I am in close touch with the North Country Chamber of Commerce, but I'm also in close touch with the administration. They want to make a deal, but Governor Cuomo has to address the failures of the green light law. And this is an issue in the 2020 election. My opponent, Taxing Tedra, supports the green light law. She supports, and it was on her website, to provide illegal immigrants with New York driver's licenses and supported the green light law, which doesn't allow our federal law enforcement officers, many of whom are in my district, to do their job.
One of the other issues that the state is having with the federal administration that really erupted in the last day or two is the decision to cut $8 billion to the state's, I believe it's pronounced DSRIP, the acronym, the Delivery System Reform Incentive Payment, which apparently, according to Governor Cuomo, could hurt the community-based healthcare system. Now, I know in the past you've co-sponsored bills to get grants to community health centers and such. What do you make of this dispute, and do you support the Trump administration's action to cut those $8 billion in grants?
Well, just to make sure that the listeners understand the facts, this is not New York State being stripped of health care funding. When CMS awarded the waiver to New York State, it was explicit in stating that this DSRIP funding would have an end date, and that is March 2020. So New York has known this from the very beginning. They knew this when they accepted the funds. And Medicaid is mismanaged in New York State. This is a budget shortfall for Governor Cuomo. It is one of the most poorly managed Medicaid programs in the country, and there needs to be reform to make sure that the dollars go to people that deserve them and not bureaucracy, and it's not mismanaged out of Albany. I will continue to stand up for rural health care, rural hospitals, and community health centers. But this is, from my perspective, this is, again, Governor Cuomo blaming others for his mismanagement. When the district funds were initially agreed to, there was a specific end date. It was explicitly stated that it was time limited, the funding, and that it would expire in March of 2020. New York has known that, and yet, even knowing that, Governor Cuomo has not tackled the Medicaid issue, which is so, so important for hundreds of thousands and millions of people across New York.
You're opposed to Medicare for all. Many Democrats are supporting that idea or variations of that idea. What kind of changes do you support, whether it's in Medicare for all types of programs or in Medicaid?
Sure. On Medicare, that's an incredibly important program for seniors in my district. I will continue to work to make sure that we deliver Medicare funds and that there's no changes made to Medicare for those above the age of 50. The reason why Medicare for All, I believe, is the wrong approach is I deal with VA cases all the time. It's the most consistent complaints we get in our office where they're having challenges with a federal agency. And since I've taken office, we get more VA complaints than any other federal agency every single week, and I track it on a weekly basis. We do not need a government takeover of healthcare. What I do support is making sure that we have coverage for those with pre-existing conditions, that we focus on lowering the overall costs, and that includes really tackling the high deductible plans that are unaffordable for families in the North Country. I also support and have voted in favor of legislation that allows associated health plans, and what that means is it allows small businesses and organizations to pool together to purchase health care coverage. That is something that the local chambers of commerce support. Additionally, I think we need to make investments in preventative care. I'm on a bipartisan bill where I'm the Republican lead to allow two primary care visits on an annual basis covered by health insurance. That would ensure that the preventative care would hopefully avoid costs down the line when someone is sicker, when they have not sought that preventative care. And then community health centers. That has been a model that works in our district. Hudson Headwaters is a good example in the Clinton County region. I was at the North Country Chamber annual dinner in Plattsburgh, and Hudson Headwaters was talking about the number of families and individuals that they have served since they've opened up their facility in Clinton County. That's great news. I'm the national leader when it comes to standing up for funding for rural health centers. So I think that's a good model for the rest of the country. The other issue that's important is critical access. We have a number of critical access hospitals in the district, and we want to make sure that those hospitals are available and continue to be in those communities because that helps the overall economy and it ensures that we have a quality of life and the health resources we need.
Congresswoman, the biggest health issue that we're hearing about right now is the coronavirus. Have you participated in any briefings about readiness for that at this point?
Yes, I have participated in briefings on coronavirus, both as full Congress we've had briefings, but I've also had briefings on my committees, and we're going to have additional briefings this week. And it's important to make sure that all of the data that we know that in real time, particularly as we see coronavirus metastasizing in other countries around the world, we need to make sure that we, CDC has the resources they need, that we're getting all the appropriate information out to the healthcare providers, and that this doesn't become an issue in the United States. But again, I've received the bipartisan briefings. One note I wanted to make, Pat, going back to Medicare for All, this is an important distinction with my opponent who previously supported Medicare for All but is now shifting her position. We know that she supports Medicare for All. Again, it was on her website when she ran for Congress. It's been widely reported in the district. And it's just another example of where she's not honest to voters in the district, just like she is flip-flop on impeachment and other issues.
Going back to coronavirus, when you're out and about in the district, how worried do you find the constituents are, or do you find that they feel a bit removed from that because we haven't really seen, you know, coronavirus flare up at all in the Northeast?
Well, we get questions on it. I get questions on it. I think there were some concerns with the quarantine right across the border from Messina from the Canadian perspective, but it sounds like that's under control by the Canadians, and there have not been any cases of constituents in my district, and I'm always available, and we often hear from constituents who are in other countries if they have issues. So I don't hear about it that much, but I know people are paying close attention as they see the media coverage, and they want to make sure that as policymakers, we have the most up-to-date information, and we're providing all the resources we need to the CDC to tackle this.
Elise Stefanik, you've come under criticism from the Post Star. You're definitely not a BFF of Ken Tingley right now, for not being more aggressive in condemning a constituent's threat of violence against reporters. I watch your Twitter response, and for me being in the field, I really wasn't comforted by your response. I was hoping you would be more aggressive in calling for less violent rhetoric. You know, why aren't you being more assertive?
Well, Pat, I'm glad you looked at my response at my town halls, and the Post Star did not quote me, even though I said I hope you will quote this in full. I absolutely condemn any violent act, any threat of violence, any insinuation of violence on anyone in the district, including reporters and especially our hardworking journalists. I will continue to condemn that. That is not who I am as a leader. And I was very explicit in saying that publicly at multiple town halls. And unfortunately, they didn't report it in that newspaper. But I think it's incredibly important in this country that we have a free press. And listen, I've taken criticism from editorial pages. That's not new to me. But I, of course, condemn any type of threat, any type of insinuation of violence on any of our journalists.
Tingley published a letter that he said that he received from you as a response to that, and the letter is actually a fundraising letter.
It wasn't a response to that. The response was, and the individual, the editorial writer you're referencing, was actually in the audience when I explicitly condemned, and absolutely there is zero tolerance for any threat of violence. And I was very specific and very clear that there is no tolerance for violence against anyone. There should be no tolerance for any threat, insinuation of violence, whether it's on social media, in person, verbally, or physical violent threats. That is not tolerated, and I have been very, very clear. Now, I tend not to read the editorials in that publication because they're just not reflective of the electorate in their readership. But my response was very specific when it comes to condemning violence. I condemn violence, and I've been very consistent, and I hope you will play the audio for your listeners at that town hall when I condemned any threat of violence.
And Elise Stefanik, when you are condemning violence, what about negative rhetoric in campaigning?
Well, that's interesting you bring that up, Pat, because my opponent raised millions of dollars off of the sexist description, Trashy Stefanik, and she gleefully accepted that money. She should return every cent of it. I think elections should be determined on policy issues, and, you know, that's why I talk about how she's voted numerous times for tax increases, and I haven't. That's very different from her raising millions of dollars from Hollywood tweeting Trashy Stefanik, and, you know, there is vitriol on social media. It's a societal-wide problem. Journalists face this, elected officials face this, candidates face this, but kids in school face this, and I think it's very, very important to keep the focus on policy differences, of which there are many. This is a very clear choice in this upcoming election. I've never voted to raise taxes. My opponent has voted multiple times to raise taxes when she was on the county legislature. I have a strong record when it comes to standing up for Second Amendment rights. She has publicly said she supports banning guns. I support our USMCA updated free trade agreement. She opposed it in the debate. I oppose impeachment and think we should be working on behalf of families and policies that will have an impact on their lives. She didn't take a position on impeachment, then she opposed it, then she supported it, and I guess she's now back to supporting impeachment. So that's where the discussion should be.
Congresswoman Stefanik, thank you so much for all your time.
Thanks, Pat. Appreciate the opportunity.
All right, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thank you for listening, and remember, if you subscribe, you'll get the latest from the Northeast delivered right to your device. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.